The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/SWOCBC for ad-free episodes, reading guides, movie and TV episode audio watch-alongs, and more. In fact, there's a full-length audio commentary for the very film we're discussing today, available now for patrons. Today's Old Canon Fact of the Day comes from the Star Wars Essential Guide to Vehicles and Vessels by Bill Smith, first published in 1995. Admiral Akbar used an expanded B-Wing fighter dubbed the B-Wing E-2 for Enhanced Model 2 as his personal diplomatic shuttle. The B-Wing E-2 is the second version of the two-man B-Wing starfighter, the first of which was originally designed by Akbar and the engineers of the Verpine Hive colonies Slain and Corpil shortly after the Battle of Yavin. Today's selection is Star Wars, a film by George Lucas, first released on May 25th, 1977. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you, always.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to more Star Wars Old Canon Book Club. Today, we are venturing in to a galaxy far, far away. Not that book stuff. Today, we're talking movie. The first one.
Star Wars. Star Wars.
Again. This is big. This is one of the big three. We have, you know, I'm excited. Yeah. Like, the book was really fun, but like, now we're in like Star Wars.
And we watched it in the OG mode with no A New Hope attached
the way it was meant to be.
We
watched 4K 77 cut.
Isn't cinema 4K? So you could argue
The 4K 77 is like a specific, if you are a super fan on the internet, you'll know about 4K 77. It's like a specific sort of like recreation using three different prints or however many prints of the new in 4K
to get it as close as accurate, to theatrical.
Yeah, which is what we watched. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and it was amazing. Genuinely amazing.
Yeah. It's great.
You know, I don't know how to describe it. Like, you ever watched The Godfather? Have you watched The Godfather recently?
I mean, yes.
I watched like half of it on like a thing and what about it?
Yeah, I watched all of it in the last 2 months.
I think that sometime in the last 10, 15 years, The Godfather like transitioned from being just like a good old movie to like a 70s movie in my mind. And when you watch it now, you go back and you see, oh, like the set dressing and the costumes are like from the 70s and like the camera work is very 70s and everything feels very 70s. The way people talk, it's very 70s. And I don't know if it was just because they got rid of all the CG and everything was like kind of like had that film grain on it again. But the fun thing about watching Star Wars this time was just kind of, and maybe it's because we watched that Light and Magic documentary on Disney Plus recently that like also is very much about how wild it was that Star Wars like blasted out. But I'm thinking of that 70s show episode where like everybody's obsessed with Star Wars.
I gotta watch this because you're like,
it's so good. Red finally sees it in the theater for the first time.
He can't deny it. Even he likes it.
Yeah.
But just watching it the way that we watched it, it kind of put me in that mindset for Star Wars. And I really enjoyed it as a piece of media, like outside of the baggage of the sequels and the characters outside of it. Like, you know, when you watch like Drive, you weren't like, what happened to him after that? You know, like, what about her? Did she get away? Like, who fucking cares? Like, in the case of Star Wars, like, the good guys win. He saves the girl. The girl doesn't need saving. She's badass. He's going to leave. And then he doesn't leave because he's nice. Like, that alone is, like, a tight story. And I love the idea of it as, like, he didn't know he was going to make a second one. And he just wanted to make this, like, sort of, it basically is Drive, if you think about it. Like, Drive came out, what, in 2010? Something like that. And it's, like, about the 80s. It's like about like a style of movie and it being like, no, this type of movie exists and it was like a style. And he's like going, remember these movies from like the 50s or whatever? It wasn't just movies. It was like a style. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Star Wars is. It's like a postmodern just sort of like pastiche of stuff. And dude, it just feels fresh. It feels more like watching like a Quentin Tarantino movie or something where it's like being edgy with its like it's smart. It's like a nerd's movie, like a film nerd's movie. Like you can tell that George Lucas is like cultured. Like he likes to watch TV and he's like, I don't know. It just felt like a movie made by somebody in their 20s this time watching it and being very fresh. And I don't know. It was tight to like get there from like, you know, peeling off years and years of my own nostalgia. I don't know. This was maybe one of my favorite times I've ever watched Star Wars.
It had the feeling of seeing it with fresh eyes, and I don't know why, and I don't know if it was because it was this particular edit,
yeah,
or if it was because we've come off with so much new stuff recently, and I haven't just sat down to watch anything old, but just sitting there and realizing what was part of the original film that wasn't added in later by George Lucas, it's great. But you can also see the things where he was like, I want to change this, and I know I want to change this, but I don't know, the seeing it as it originally was made me appreciate what a good movie it is.
Yeah, exactly. Like the special effects being crappy, like the bad lightsaber, the little squares that are like behind the TIE fighters as they spin through space.
Yeah.
Like that shit, like number one, watching the movie, you're not like distracted by how bad the effects are. You're like in it and it feels textured. Like,
It's surprising, and it shouldn't be surprising because it's fucking real stuff. But like, it's surprising. Like, oh, this stuff is still tight now. Like, it still works. The Death Star, the trench run, all that stuff. It's fucking tight. It's sick.
It looks amazing. Like it. The lack of cleanliness around it is very like. It makes you realize that people made it and did a good job of doing like a handmade special effect. Like, maybe this is because I'm from California. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you think differently because you're from a different part of the country, Jesse. But like, there's like people always talk about the difference between Disney World and Disneyland and how Disney World people like, there's a type of person who thinks, well, obviously Disney World is better because it's bigger and there's more stuff and they got all this space and it's like, you know, everybody's comfortable and like it's huge and expensive. And then Disneyland is like one-fifth the size. Everything's tiny, but it's handmade. You can feel that it's from the 60s. There's like something exciting about the fact that Disney is old and you can feel the oldness. Like the same way when you go to like Europe from America as an American person and see like, oh shit, this memorial in London is from a fire that happened 900 fucking years ago or some shit. You're like, this is like legit. And you look around at all the buildings and you're like, this is legit because it feels older. I feel like Star Wars doesn't normally have that because they try and make it seem like it's from now all the time. Like, it's really like discordant to go watch that movie and get like 2022 quality special effects in there. It's really weird. But watching it without that, seeing like the scene where Han Solo goes down with Greedo and it's like, he's like a brutal guy who murders Greedo, like that type of shit, like adding like this edginess to the movie right there. That's like not another movie.
It's not even murder. Greedo is there to kill him and
he kills him first.
Yeah. It's just like,
well, that's what I mean. It's like, it's the point is just like, there was no thought to like, we can't have Han Solo, the big major character, have this moment where he like kills someone, because Han Solo wasn't shit at this time. He was just in service to the story of Star Wars. Like,
right.
He's being like an edgy space pirate. Like,
he got to be a like real person instead of, oh, he has to be a hero later, so we have
half,
to like,
yeah. Half the people watching the movie are like, oh yeah, this guy fucks. You know what I mean? Like, this guy like drinks beers and smokes weed. And now you don't want him to be that way because he's like a family friendly hero. And by the time you get to Return of the Jedi, even Empire, like Star Wars was a different thing. You know what I mean? So that's the to me, that's the special thing about Star Wars 4 or Star Wars A New Hope 4. That, like, to me, that's the special thing about it, is that it's the only one where the actors, the writers, nobody involved knows that it's the most important movie ever made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is like so fucking cool. And I think honestly, like, if we're talking about pure Star Wars, which is probably something we're going to talk about a lot on this show, because we're talking about, you know, basically like a version of the mythos before a giant corporation took over, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that you cannot get purer than these two, this book and this movie.
And a combination, perfect.
Yeah.
It was so much fun to read what the ideas were and then experience what they became. And even just knowing that Vader was going to jump down from the top of the ship and then watching him enter, I think it's too... And then seeing all the supplemental things that since we watched the movie, I've now seen two things totally just in the wild. I saw one where they were describing the fact that originally the Millennium Falcon was supposed to be the Tantive.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then George Lucas was like, no, it's too similar to this other ship. Go make me something. And then they came up with a Millennium Falcon, and that was amazing. And then Mark Hamill, I saw an interview where he was saying that while on set, he wanted to see Darth Vader's big entrance. And so he went to the set that day, and Vader walks in, does this whole thing, and he goes over to George, and he's like, George, I don't understand. Like, why don't you have anyone be like, oh, that's Darth Vader. He's the Dark Lord of the Sith. Like, that kind of thing. And George Lucas was like, it's a white hallway, and this big hulking, like, black monstrous thing comes down the hallway, and we're going to play some music over it, and people will get it.
You'll get it, yeah.
And he was like, and they did, and it blew my mind, and I realized, like, that's good storytelling. It was simple, and it did its job, and I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. And it works. Still works.
Yeah, it's fucking... It's very, I don't know, like, even the idea, like, watching, like, how do I describe this? Like, you know Final Fantasy X?
I do.
You guys familiar with that game?
I love that game.
So Final Fantasy X has like sequels.
It does.
Yeah. And the sequels are like Final Fantasy X-2.
Right.
Or I think actually it only has one sequel.
Yeah. Final Fantasy XIII has two sequels.
Yeah,
perfect. Though.
Yeah, even better. Final Fantasy XIII has two full sequels. Final Fantasy XIII-2 and Final Fantasy XIII-3.
Yeah.
Lightning's Revenge. Or Lightning's Return. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Point is,
they're like sequels to the story of Final Fantasy. You know what I mean? But watching Star Wars this time, in my mind, I've decided officially that in the Alex world of things that are true, only the Alex world, the sequel to Star Wars is Indiana Jones. Because...
What?
Because...
I'm excited to hear this explanation.
Wait, what?
It is. Like, Star Wars is like... The concept of Star Wars before, like, the characters took off and the world took off and stuff was just George Lucas being like, I want to, like, take... this mythology and like mix it with this like very like this pastiche of like pop culture stuff from like a little while ago, like from when I was a kid, and kind of like grow that up, kind of like make it, you know, like an adult version for cool
how can
people.
I dunify or like how can I samurify a Dune movie, that kind of thing, where it's like a clearly a combination of all the things he loves.
It's like Flash Gordon, it's this stuff. And then literally he was like, Steven, let's do that again, but with, like, the other type of guy, like a Tintin.
Yeah.
Like, and they did that again. And to me, that's the sequel. Like, to me, that's, like, the actual sequel to Star Wars. Like,
it's like Shaun of the Dead to Hot Fuzz. It's like, it's not like the story is, it's like, here is my take on a different genre.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's, and I also feel like, you know what holds what sort of holds that reading up for me is the fact that when he did actually go and make Star Wars again outside of his like first trilogy, when he came back and did the prequels, he did the same thing again. He chose a different type of thing, like an even older type of thing, something that probably would have been fully silent in the original form, and made that into like a giant modern blockbuster. He made like Charlie Chan looking type stuff, you know, like the very old school stuff. And I don't know, like thinking about Star Wars in that context, like if we're talking about pure Star Wars, I think there's something to that that I think that is like something that still today gets us excited with Star Wars. Stuff like The Mandalorian really resonated with people because they look at it and they don't even realize, oh, finally, Star Wars is returning to the like pop culture pastiche formula that it has. That's not what they're seeing. They're just like, I know cowboys. I like cowboys. Like, I know. Right. And to me, that's good. To me, that's like, I don't know. Like, I think that I want that to be my like guiding light through the process of reading through the new stuff, is like thinking about all the new, like all the stories and stuff from the old canon in my memory. Obviously, like, if I'm going to be real, I haven't read an old canon book
in years.
Yeah.
Maybe over a decade.
Over a decade, yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. not even Heir to the Empire. Like, I haven't even read, I like skimmed a couple passages from it because I was interested in what it read like when we were reading Thrawn on the old show. But like, literally, like, I was just like, I remember Heir to the Empire being like better written than this. So I went back and read it. Yeah. But like, but my point is, I think that taking us through this old canon, I think anything that leans into this, I think is the better, the more successful Star Warsification. I think that's the, like, when somebody else is writing Star Wars besides George Lucas, I think we're going to find, and this is just my like working theory right now, is that like, I think that the pop culture element and the like pastiche element and like the, you know, tropey romantic plot points, I think that's Star Wars. And I think that, I don't know, that was like my big takeaway from just watching this movie this time.
I would be curious to see as we go through these books, because I've come to the conclusion, having watched this movie and just while you were talking, that the best Star Wars is Star Wars that is something plus space.
Yeah, exactly
where
right.
Where it's like cowboy plus space, or in, like, we love Dr. Aphra. Dr. Aphra is just Lady Indiana Jones plus space.
Yeah. That's that it. One did it. That's one you like. And it's that. Yeah.
And all the times where it's good is where it isn't spending 8 or 9 episodes up its own butt about like the qualities of a lightsaber. Like, it's interesting for a little bit, but I'm not here for that.
Or the stuff that, like, you remember that like 4-part comic that like was right after Return of the Jedi and it ended up with Poe's like parents
planting the tree? Yeah.
Where it's like, there is nothing here.
Yeah,
it's just story content. It doesn't really like...
Like that book. That
it's
like,
not a take. It doesn't have a thing. It's just more.
It's some weird connector that they felt was necessary that, oh, Poe is part... Like, Poe is really part of the story.
Yeah.
Just not some... And I think that kind of sucks. And I'm all about just Star Wars telling Star Wars tales. And I hope that in the future... As it appears they're trying to do with some of the things coming down the pipeline at Disney, that they're just like, F it. It's a space opera set in space in a galaxy far, far away. It doesn't need to be anything other than a space. Like, it could be anything they want it to be.
People are not that choose. Like, what do you really know? Like the average person who's watching Star Wars is not us, right? Like, that's what we talked about all the time back in the day. Like, we know the answers to all these questions, and like, Davis getting mad about like the details is like coming from a place of like, you have like basically studied for decades. Like, you know, like you studied Star Wars for years to have the knowledge that you have to get to the point where you're noticing these things. But like, the average person doesn't care about like the lore of Han, Luke, and Leia and like what they've been up to, like between when they can see them in the movies. Nobody gives a shit about that. I think that that's what Star Wars 1 is that. It's like, nobody cares who Luke is. Nobody cares about Han Solo outside of what he does in this movie. Princess Leia, outside of the fact that she's a princess and she, like, whips ass and says fuck. Like, that's what you want. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's all you need. That's the story. Is the fun bit is the ragtag crew fighting the Dark Lord. And the fact that there's this, like, Jedi thing in there is, like, for you. You know what I mean? It's not for another writer to pick it up and take it and, like, tell you more about Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's to put in your idea, like, wouldn't it be cool if you were a Jedi Knight? Like, wouldn't it be cool if you got to find out that you were going to go fly in a space battle? The plot doesn't fucking matter outside of the context of itself. That's the thing that I think is really cool.
But the thing that we're going to come to realize as we continue the show is that at a certain point, and I would love to know when this is, because there has to be sort of a demarcation line of, for a while, I would say mostly during the 80s, early 90s, Star Wars existed in a place of, this is Star Wars, these are the characters, there is this Force thing that exists, and...
Dungeons & Dragons.
Whatever your mind thinks it is, it is what it is. And then at a certain point, it became, this is the Force, this is the characters, this is the world, this is the universe, this is what... And that's sort of where it was like, okay, we accept what you're saying... And it reminds me of, and I'm sure, Davis, you can appreciate this, the idea of Warcraft coming in and being like, okay, we know we've been around for a while and we have all these story elements. We're finally going to codify what is real, What is canonical? And so you buy it, you're like, all right, if that's what you're saying, I buy in completely. And then the minute they start messing with stuff, you're like, well,
that makes me mad. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm angry because you told me this is the way it was, and now you're telling me it's midichlorians, right? Yeah, and you're like, exactly. Well, that's stupid. And so I think at some point we're going to find that either an author or some sort of like source book or some sort of something will happen where it's going to say to us, this is how this works. And then everyone's going to be like, okay, that's how that works. And then from that point on, it's a shit show because we've been told. And before that moment, it was just the Force is ethereal. It's like whatever the hell you want it to be. It's ethereal, dude.
It's, yeah, it's true. It's true. Like, I don't know. Empire Strikes Back is like, it's a good ass movie about Luke, Han, and Leia, the people. Yeah. Again, like they picked up the threads of the people and like continued Han and Leia's character growth and continued Luke's character growth. And that's like one way you could have gone with it, right? And I think that's what George had in mind. And I honestly don't think George was that close to the characters. Like, I don't know that. I mean, I can't speak for that yet. And I think when we look at, I think next we're going to do Splinter the Mind's Eye, which is like the Alan Dean Foster sort of version of a sequel to this.
Yeah.
And I'm only a little bit into it, but like, I think that originally, and I think that for even the first trilogy, the specifics of who anyone was didn't really matter so much that he was trying to.
They're just archetypes.
Yeah. He's trying to like use them to like as puppets to sort of like emulate this classical structure that he has. And anything that the characters say or do is just in service to that sort of like postmodern sort of thought, right? Like to like do Joseph Campbell with these cool space characters, right? And I think you're right. I think we're going to get to that point. And I think like right now we're in the dawn of creation. We're going to see Splinter of the Mind's Eye, which is like not canon, but it is canon, but it isn't canon. It's like Splinter of the Mind's Eye is like not canon with the old canon.
But yeah, it's like the first thing to be decanonized.
It is, but it is, but it is now recanonized because now it's Legends. But it's
right.
It's
but like canon almost. Canon almost is a, and look, I'm the guy that used to argue on behalf of canon. I have come a long way since then, and I'm like, canon is almost, if you're not actually gonna like do it, if you're not gonna like have it written out,
if it's not Lord of the Rings, yeah,
because like Lord of the Rings comes out, and you're like, that's. That's one story.
Lord of the Rings, they did it. Yeah.
Like
exactly.
Already, Return of the Jedi isn't canon with the other one. Like, yeah. They already changed stuff. I don't think that Vader's being his father was the plan either, originally, based on what we've seen. So it's tough, but like, that is like, no, that didn't happen. Like, that's like,
yeah.
Splinter of the Mind's Eye is just a different way for it to go. Sure. A lot of what you just said, I totally agree with about the characters, and I like, these are stuff I was like thinking, and now having like worked in a medium for a long time where I'm writing a lot of stuff, and then again that ILM documentary is like, I think everybody has seen a million different documentaries about Star Wars. Somehow, at least for me, they made some of the stuff seem, maybe because they were focusing on the studios, like the magic behind it, that they came at it from a different angle than I hadn't seen it before.
You can see where their heads were at for sure.
But also, yeah. One thing that the only negative thing I'll say, and that I've been waiting to, I'm so late to the Dune game. I am decades late. I saw that fucking movie. It blew my mind, and I was like, he stole Dune. He stole it and made it dumber.
Yeah.
And I love Dune and I love Star Wars, but like I was watching it and I'm like, everything of that is, especially in A New Hope, is Dune. Like the Force, the fucking voice that makes them do stuff, the look of the planet, there's a special sword. Like all of this shit is like Dune. I've just been waiting to get on this podcast again and be like, oh, I'm sure everybody else was like, yeah, no, hi, I'm now on the level of that now.
Except that Paul Atreides, right, is a character written with intention from the beginning
life
to the end of his
life. Yeah, no spoils there.
No. So like, what, we all know like the Joseph Campbell aspect, but they kind of like walked, like I didn't know that George Lucas, I'd never seen American Graffiti and now I need to see it, but I didn't know he was into like hot rodding. Yeah. I didn't know that he was just sort of like a fucking layabout and got in like an accident, and then, you know, his mom or some, I forgot what they said he did. Like, basically, like, that got him into like going somewhere with his life. And then he went into like film school and like fell in love studying Joseph Campbell and got obsessed with mythology.
He's just
and
like
world
a
building.
Nerd. Yeah.
And so it makes total sense why, also, if you look at the different versions of the story, he's like a guy that had a vision in his head, and it didn't, like, the vision wasn't of Luke Skywalker and Han. His vision was the world.
Yeah.
And so I think you're like,
dead the artistic, on. Like the, well, not even the world, like the artistic world.
Like, well, and
the,
he was like they're talking about how, and he was like, I wanted to take 2001 A Space Odyssey, but make it go fast, basically. And yeah, he sort of like had this world that was informed by Dune, 2001. And I think why it took him a while to settle on the story, but what he ended up doing was like the monomyth or like that stuff. Storytelling, it's such a classic, compelling story that he just needed a skeleton to put his universe on.
It's like left brain and right brain, kind of. Like Dune and Lord of the Rings are like all about the structure, the shape, the adherence to like geopolitical trends, like politics of humanity, like mapped onto an entire race, languages, cultures. You know, Star Wars is like, oh, this is the Gleep Glorps, and these are the Poombams, and this is the fucking Squid Man who gets shot in the face. Like, that to me is the thing that's interesting about Star Wars versus those other things.
Like in this case, Star Wars is a like amusement park or a ride, and the plot is just how we get there. You're like, what's a great way to show a small section of the world and open it up? Yeah. We're gonna do this guy. He's like in a farm, nothing, and we're gonna like slowly have him meet characters, and it's gonna go bigger. A movie that does this also that gets not the same love, because Avatar is literally the same as Star Wars. I will die on this hill. It is like incredible technology and a cool world and a really simple classic story, just designed to walk you through the world, basically.
Yeah. Well, and I think the brilliance behind that, Avatar is a good example. I think there are many examples in media that do the exact same thing, but it makes you appreciate how brilliant Lucas is here, because it's like, this is a film where they introduce a galaxy of possible stories, an empire that exists far away. We don't know. We saw one tiny part of the empire. The villain escapes. There are characters that we don't. There could be a second movie, and it might not even be about Han, Luke, and Leia.
Exactly.
There's, right. It could be anything, and I think that's where the brilliance of it comes from. Obviously, for money reasons, people were like, we want to see Han, Luke, and Leia's story continue, but it could have been anything, and I think that's the brilliance behind it. It reminds me of, if anyone's ever played, for our gamers out there, the very first Dishonored.
We got gamers here?
Damon. The first Dishonored game is literally
that game
in a city.
Is incredible.
It's brilliant, but it has the same structure where it takes place in a city, you experience the city, you learn all this lore, but it's like, outside the city is a whole bunch of other crazy shit, and the more you learn, the more you're like, I want to see that! And they never let you. And the whole point is because it's like, if we make a sequel, there's so much potential. And that is the same thing here. It's the same thing with anything that is left kind of vague and open, but at the same time, very hyper-specific about what it's supposed to be. And so you're right, it isn't the like, oh, well, this type of Hobbit hates this type. It isn't completely fleshed out. It is, wherever we go from here, we can do whatever, you know, splinters in my eye.
It's
man.
More
Let's get
like,
crazy.
Yeah, like, how do I describe this? Like comic books, the medium of comic books, and I think I'm specifically talking about like the one that I'm most familiar with, which is like the big two American comic book superhero comics, right? Like, there are things about the medium
Archie and Garfield.
There's things about the
Garchi's
medium.
Not good.
No, it's a ripoff. It's a ripoff. There's things about the medium of comics and superhero comics specifically that some people get mad about it sometimes, but I think like in order, like the Marvel Comics universe and the DC Comics universe aren't like, they don't work. They don't like make sense. Like the way that crime works doesn't make sense. Like the fact that there's like world-ending calamities all the time. Like, Peter Parker has been, like, outed to the entire world, and then a magic spell, like, erased to everybody knowing about him and all this stuff. And the end result of that, after 50 years of these types of stories, or 100 years of these types of stories, is that we as the reader kind of look to that stuff as part of the flavor of comic books, is the sort of hokiness, like the general hokiness of the comic books and the structure of the myths and the, you know, things like characters with alliterative names, or, you know,
Blackagar Boltagar.
Don't disrespect Black Bolt.
I will and always.
That's the king.
I will always disrespect
listen,
Black Bolt.
Listen.
That guy sucks.
That's the worst. That is the worst name.
No,
Blackagar Bolt again sucks.
But we like it anyway. The no. point is, it's cool.
I like Black Bolt. You could just call him Black Bolt.
The
you
point is,
to...
it's tight that it's janky. Like, the jankiness is part. Like, sucks. Like, dude, like,
the
like
Namor. Era.
Namor wears. Yeah. Namor wears underwear. You know, Superman wears underwear. Like, people don't.
That just
recognize,
makes sense.
People don't recognize. Superheroes,
your dick would be flopping about,
but you get what I'm saying. People don't recognize superheroes. Yeah, yeah. Like, there's no way Wolverine could be on every superhero team. He just wouldn't have the time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. You just sort of accept it because it allows you to have the imagination playground of Marvel, and just, you know, it's a malleable world with a lot of, like, stretchy parts that don't matter.
Sure.
Lord of the Rings is not like this. You know what I mean? Lord of the Rings is thought out, everything. The story of Middle-earth is there. He is thinking about it. It's the creation of a man. It's one man's mind palace. Like, you know, like it's like a separate reality that he thought into creation, fully formed. They speak, they all know the same thing.
Unless you're making those Mordor games, in which case Spider becomes a very sexy
that
lady.
I can't even touch that. But I'm just saying, like, Lord of the Rings was conceived of as, like, a story of a world and a history of a place.
Did you see that Spider, though?
But Star Wars, and I was thinking about this after watching the doc, the little video essay that was on FilmJoy recently, that was, like, about Rise of Skywalker. He, like, waited a really long time to put out his Rise of Skywalker video. And the point that really stuck out to me that was really interesting is that, like, and this isn't, like, me trying to excuse something like Rise of Skywalker or something like that. That's, like, not really the point of what I'm trying to say. But, like, the fact that somehow the Emperor came back, and the fact that, like, the dead speak, and the fact that, like, the ending is very contrived, and the fact that, like, it's just all sort of, like, sappy, dappy, and they just kind of, like, shmeh through stuff to, like, make it make sense in the way they want it so that they can get the galaxy to show up. There's part of that, to me, that is, like, integral to the flavor of Star Wars. The fact that everything just kind of flows out as needed in service to the story is, to me, part of it. Like, the fact that, like, there's, like, the fucking Admiral Akbar is named, he's a fucking calamari. Like, it's like fucking, that's stupid. It's named after a fucking squid, like, squid ring dessert, squid ring appetizer, probably. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's dumb, right? That's, there's no, you can't justify that as, like,
you're trying to say calf is stupid?
I'm just saying all that stuff is, like, janky, and it's also kind of, like, what we like.
It's part of the flavor.
Yeah, yeah. And, again, just circling it back to, like, the fact that we just watched the first Star Wars movie, I think that's coming through a lot harder. And I think that it's weird that what George Lucas wanted to do was kind of, like, spruce up those movies, because it kind of really distracts from the fact that the jankiness is part of it. And I would maintain that the jankiness is part of it in the prequels even. I'm not saying they aren't bad movies in a way. I'm just saying that, like, the fact that he approached Attack of the Clones has a dumb name. He tried to do the detective thing. Like, it's all there. It's like the contrived sort of paste, copy paste is there. There's something about Star Wars, the movie, that's like a perfect version of that. And I think the reason is because it's the only one that you can watch as the only thing. It's the only thing that you can watch as the whole Star Wars. At one point, it definitely
that has to do with it. I think, like, other things are just, when you're young and hungry, the creativity flows differently. Like,
we can't get into, when, like, is it better or worse?
No, no, but I'm saying, like, just, like, I don't know, when he's the prequels, I don't think were him at his most creative. Also, watching the ILM thing, everybody working at ILM is, like, a weird genius of another thing. Like, it is a perfect storm of like young, hungry minds thinking outside the box to create something.
Well, I would say the prequels in that context, the prequels are that again.
Yeah, I think this whole conversation comes down to about the right time or moment to do these things. So like just going through everything you said, a great example is back to Rise of Skywalker. If the first movie in the new trilogy started with suddenly the Emperor's back, we don't know why, that would give us three movies to work out why. Like, we would have time to sit on that and rest with it, because instead of doing it the last movie out of nowhere, it seems weird. That's why it hits you so hard. It just seems weird. And the same thing with the prequels. You can see exactly what he was trying. Like, you said he liked hot rods? You can see he was trying to do hot rods. He loves the Millennium
Falcon
stuff.
Was like a fucking, they took a UFO and then like bolted shit on
rotted
top
it out,
of it.
Yeah.
And it's super interesting to see all the different things. Like, you can tell his hungry was a different type of hungry when it was with the prequels, because it was very clear they were trying to do something that just didn't work. Like, they sat down and said, we're going to make a movie. We're going to green screen the shit out of it. We're going to go all full special effects. We're going to make it look amazing because this is the new technology. And at the end of the day, they realized, and I think a lot of people realized, that if actors aren't acting with like sets and other people, it looks stiff, it looks weird, and a lesson was learned. But the dude tried and he went 100% out on it, and I appreciate it. They're not my favorite, but I appreciate it. And I think there's just different phases of Star Wars and all the jankiness. There are times when it lands, like just original episode 4.
There's no baggage, that's why. Well, like that's what like, that's what it is.
Also, there's a hunger element, and there's a like, it sounds like he had this vision. I mean, he had help from his wife who edited and a bunch of his famous movie friends. But, like, things weren't going well. He had to, like, fight to get it. And then it seems like, for especially episode 1, everyone's like, oh, it's George Lucas. He's got this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sure. But, like, the fucking stuff they were doing for ILM was stuff that people were making because they were like, oh, I just did stop motion in my free time. Like,
there was no brand. There was no
X-Wing
yet.
You had more creative. You had like more sous chefs in the kitchen also helping, like, because there were, he said like a lot of those shots from the cantina weren't even shot on the location.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough aliens. So they like picked up those shots later and he's like, can you make me 8 cool aliens? And I think like by the time episode 1 came around, Star Wars is a big machine, and I'm sure a lot of those same people were just like, no, he's got it, we'll just do it. And they weren't as like, they weren't going out on the limb the same way. Like, it's just a different, it's a different beast.
Well, it's yes manning at that point, where it's George can do no wrong, and whatever he agrees to, and which is why I think his idea of, I'm gonna make this all digital as shit, is, you know, they learned a lot and we got a lot out of it.
He wanted to make it a leap too, you know what I mean? Like, he wanted to repeat.
You could see what he was trying to do when he kept updating the originals, is he was trying to take everything to another level. And while it may not have been an incredible, I mean, the movies were a success, but it may not have landed the way he wanted it to, a lot of the things that came from that have made other movies better. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, at the end of the day.
Also, we are going to watch episode 1 and we'll talk about that later.
Well,
On the effects stuff, I can't like transport my mind back to the 70s, but I can imagine that.
Mind blowing.
They're like, especially watching that, not only do they have to, like, they had to make technology that didn't exist.
They made cameras.
They had to machine the equipment to shoot their never before done effect. Like, I didn't understand that before. I just knew they were doing new things. I didn't know that they had to make the new things to do the new things.
It used to just be outside of the computers and you just had to do everything. Every time you did anything, it was something.
Yeah, but like that that technology from whatever university where it was like they mapped a small camera so they could do like literally different proportion sizes stuff. Like that the only way to get the speed was they had to actually attach to a fucking car to get the trench to go fast enough. Like the way, I mean, we all have digital now, so you can just look at your shot. But when they were talking about how they were like, they had to set up a dummy thing, do it, go fucking develop that and
see
like
that
get it ready and then do it and be like, all right, do you like this? And then like adjust, go do it again. Like,
yeah.
It's the amount of work that was put into it is, it's insane. Kit bashing, I now know what the term kit bashing came from, and that's just literally they took models and I guess World War II tanks and stuff. They would like
it's a perfect take bits and pieces it's a perfect allegory for or like you know sort of poetic link to like what Star Wars is in general. Is
just absolutely it's a kit bash. Bunch of things put together.
And like I've always loved it. It's like comfort food, but also something that like I've done a lot recently, especially with Alex, is just you get into like the MCU. You start to like watch a lot of the Hollywood movies. Going back, watching foreign films, watching, reading other books from different eras,
movies from before 2010. Yeah,
like engaging in storytelling on different mediums and from different eras helps you realize like all right. A lot of people that watch this stuff is like, no, the new stuff is better because the old stuff is like boring. And you're like, no. Pull away the like that they talk like you talk now. And there are classic things that stand the test of time. And there's a lot of other movies from the 70s or other things that
do not.
They just don't. But Star Wars, like on top of it, and it's because it's the monomyth or whatever, like it, they, on top of the like icing that is an 11, they also have the core. They just nail the core so well. Yeah. They just, Luke is a classic hero that he wants something like Han Solo is the rapscallion for the eight. Like they just,
they were free.
Nail it.
They were free to be
perfectly.
They're free to be completely creative and artistic with every element of the story. Only this one time. If you think about it, like once this movie's out, everybody on Earth has an idea of what Luke Skywalker is. Everybody's already
the Final Fantasy effect or whatever. He was like, everyone has an idea of what Final Fantasy is.
Yeah,
but it's not the same. Like it's different.
Everybody, but like even like the X-wing.
But only mine matters.
My point is they were redesigning everything. They were redesigning the X-wing to make it perfect. They were doing they had the ability to change every element. And and now, you know, 30, 40 years later, right? Like the complete, not only is it like just through the context of like what's been shown in the movies, but now there's like this force online of like people together who all think they know what Star Wars should be. And you have to think about that when you make the story. You cannot be creatively free in the same way, just by not just because of some Disney whatever edict, like even if it wasn't Disney who owned Star Wars, after you make it and it's a hit, you're beholden to that.
Yeah.
I don't know why when you said that, the first thing that came to my mind as an example was imagine being the first person to make pizza.
Yeah.
You know, pizza is a crust, sauce, cheese, topping. But over time, everyone has their own idea of what a good pizza should be, and people will fight about what a good pizza is, whether it's New York or Chicago or Detroit or whatever. They'll fight over it because at that point, we are now at the point where you can pick your pizza cult. There's so many different pizzas you can love, but originally, what it was at its base is the same thing every pizza really is.
Yeah.
And I think that's super – because at the end of the day, like, pizza's good. Pizza's good. No matter what pizza you're eating, it's probably delicious.
Exactly.
And that's – I think that's Star Wars. Star Wars is like, you know what? It's good, but it's just, you know, I'm going to complain because it's not a New York style Star Wars. You know what I mean? It's that kind of
thing. Yeah, I mean, you look
to go also with this, because I was thinking about it earlier when we were talking about how it like, it evolves. It also is like, I mean, pizza is a good example, or like burgers. Like,
yeah.
You keep putting more and more toppings, but it doesn't, but then you have the original, which is just really good sauce, really good cheese and really good, and you're like, oh, this is better. Like, it's less. It has fewer.
But better subjective, right?
But it, you remember why the elements are here.
Sure.
Like, you know, meatballs are good, but do we need them? We just have this. Like, sorry,
you're right. Like, it's, you can appreciate what the original was, and you can even say it's better, but to someone else, they might be like, no, I like mine with blue cheese and onion rings on it. Or I like mine with dates or whatever. What, you know, like, just crazy shit on
it's
there.
It's what we were just saying, you know, about using Star Wars characters as just like marionettes to get your myth out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not something that everybody thinks is the correct way to think about Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, famously, in 2017, somebody wrote a story about the characters of Star Wars and used them as, like, disposable back, like, you know, disposable characters to tell a mythical story. And, like, you know, it was a exercise in pure creativity, right, from The Last Jedi. Like, he's just trying to write a story, obviously. But, like, because he did that in a time 40, 50 years after that where, you know, it's not just George Lucas's version of Star Wars.
It's everyone's Star Wars.
Yeah, you're changing, like, specifically Davis's version, specifically Jesse's version, specifically Alex's version. You're in dialogue with all these different versions of Star Wars that didn't exist when it was just your own private little idea. And I think, I don't know, like, Star Wars, I think, honestly, is the perfect example for why we should be making new shit all the time rather than, you know, just retreading the same territory over and over again. And I think we're going to find, as we go through all these nonsensical Star Wars related stories and stuff, that the most fun we're going to have is when we get in that pure zone. And I think that's a feature of the Legends universe that is much more distinct than the current Disney universe. And I more than anything, like, having watched, reading that first book and watching this movie, that's the thing that I'm pointing out to me, like, the big thing that's different. And I'm very excited to find out more about that. These are my little theses for this podcast. That's like where my head's at right now. I want to track like what happened to Star Wars over time. So where I'm at right now.
The thing that I think we're going to see is that for the most part, the main Star Wars books are just what's Luke and Leia and Han up to. And to me, that's fine. It's like, whatever. You know, I think the Thrawn trilogy is incredible and there's some other ones that are good. But for the most part, I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't really care about Jason Solo. Like, I never really cared that much.
Yeah.
But let me tell you about the comics.
Yeah.
The comics are no rules, just right. They're like, they're like 10,000 years ago. Yeah, we're like 100,000.
Fuck you. Star Wars is different. Completely different.
Which is the cool way to do it.
It's very cool. And that's when they're like, oh, by the way, also, there's this other guy, and he's kind of like a Jedi too, and he does his own. He's like Han and Luke together.
Yeah.
And they start introducing other things, and that's when it takes off for me, because as much as I love the Luke and the Leia, like, that's fine, and it's nice to see what happens to them, but seeing them flesh out this universe that has so much potential, like the fact that they're like, yo, those green guys, they emit pheromones that turn people on. That's their character. And you're like, Star Wars, baby. Let's do this.
There was a cosmonaut.
Yeah.
There's like six astronauts.
That dude, the fucking haircut in the bar.
There was clearly a child bat that was drinking. Nobody carded that. It even like...
His name's Cabe.
Yeah. I mean, like, it probably just came down to the practicalities of the person that you would fit in the suit. But I'm like, look, you could be like, oh no, it's a full-grown bat. But I'm like, no. Look at how children try to grab something versus
maybe he was a full-grown bat.
That's a boy.
Maybe he's just got little bat arms.
Yeah, maybe he's just a little tiny Batman.
Look, his credit is...
Maybe that's Batboy. Yeah. Maybe that's Batboy from the tabloids.
Yeah. What I love about... We're not going to get there for a little while with the video games because we got to get through the Ataris first, but what's so pure to me about the video games, or a lot of the video games that come out, like the Dark Forces and stuff that go off, they get to be... You get to, like... They're separate. It's not the story, but you get to play in the world, and it's like almost an even better way to engage with Star Wars. Like, cool, you have the world, but now here is like you playing in it, and
there really isn't
some of the
larger
stuff from, you know, like you're gonna fight the stormtroopers, but it's like doesn't.
There's no larger idea at play. They're not really trying to like. How do I like?
Well, and like the stories are like the Valley of the Jedi, like the shit that they do. I think we all know, no one is like, no, that's really lore. Like, Kyle Katarn comes into play and stuff more, but like, the shit that happens in some of those games, you're like, that couldn't, that just can't, that just,
That's Star Wars.
It's fun. Jedi Knight but 1 and 2 have like an insane short, story.
Yeah.
Insane.
That's like Star Wars.
They do,
yeah.
It's like when they do fucking any of those, like, what was it, like Batman Black and White, or anytime they're like, we're going to just do short stories. They're not connected. They're not even connected to the canon. They're just a cool one-shot adventure with characters you're familiar with. And that's like, the games do those really well. Then they start to, I think around like the PlayStation 2 era, they kind of all start to tie in. I'm thinking like,
there's a lot of movies. There's a lot of movie games.
Prequel related stuff.
Prequel related stuff, definitely. I think like Shadows of the Empire is a little different because that's like a whole cool thing.
Rebel Assault was great.
But Rebel Assault didn't tie into.
Yes, it did. What are you talking about?
No, I mean, it tied in, but it wasn't like.
That's the thing. There's no larger. It's not like a media move in the way that it is today.
Yeah.
Like,
right. Yes.
Like even the books, like the Black Fleet Crisis and the Jedi Academy trilogy. Like, all these insane things, there's no, even though they came out within just a couple years of each other, all these different things, and they're like huge, earth-shaking things, it's not like now where we have like the multiverse saga and the infinity saga, and it all matters, and you get weird books like Catalyst. Remember that book where it's like, I don't know, like it was a fine book, but like, I don't understand why somebody would write a story with these events in it, you know? And it's just like...
Well, it's designed to get hype in Star Wars fans for a movie that's coming out, but it's a non-thing.
It's clearly matter. Like it's clear to me that like the Black Fleet Crisis or these other things, it's like the good idea was what's going to happen in the story,
right?
Rather than
they were made because they had something.
Rather than we need a story about Captain Phasma. Well, I don't care. Like, I'm sure you'll figure out something interesting to make it about. Don't worry about it.
Like, that's the same thing that we saw when we went over the Aftermath books. The very first one was kind of like a nothing thing. It existed before we even got a first movie, just to explain to us that there once was a battle in a place called Jakku, and like and then the other two books are so much better because they were like, write a story now.
Yeah.
And so, and I think that's the same thing here, is we're going to see a lot of books that are just insane, crazy things. Again, we're going to get to a point where Chewbacca's got to watch out for moons, y'all.
Dude.
Like, we're going to get to some crazy... I can't wait.
That's like the Game of Thrones time for Star Wars, when just people just be dying. Crazy. Like, people just start dying. Like, characters that you love just...
But I think...
30 of them dead.
The difference there is that...
Yeah.
In the books, they had the audacity to kill the characters, and we would accept their deaths because we had 25 years of books. If you were a fan, you watched Luke and Leia, they watched them get old. You watched their kids become the next line of Jedi. Yeah. You saw all that stuff. So as people start dying off, it's like, all right.
Of course, people are mad, but it's not like now where it's like,
yeah,
Luke is ruined.
Well, that's because people hadn't seen Luke in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, people hadn't seen them for 40 years.
Yeah.
And so people are just like, I got to know what's going to happen. Oh, they're finally back. This is the best moment of my life. And you've taken it from me, which is a different experience. And I like get why people are angry.
It reminds me of, like, celebrity deaths. Like, when somebody young dies, it's really, like, tragic because of the things you didn't get. And I think, like, the Disney era of Star Wars, like, killing off Han and things because they erased or don't acknowledge their expanded history, and all you got was... Han, I guess, broke up.
The very next time you saw him, he died.
And then he dies. But whereas, like, when an old Hollywood actor dies at 90, you're like, ah, it's a bummer that they're not here, but, like, they did get the full run. So it's like, yeah, Chewie died. I haven't read that book. I just know of it. But it's like, I do have 50 adventures with, like, it maybe it was time or something, you know?
It really was. And honestly,
it's a different energy.
Honestly, the replacement for Chewie, pretty interesting.
Yeah. And there's also, and going off of that, what you were saying, Davis, there's also the idea that if a celebrity dies at 90, for example, if we don't see them and suddenly there's a tweet that they're dead, it's a lot more like, oh man, that sucks, compared to someone like a Betty White, who is constantly around, who like is part of the culture. And it's like, wow, that's like very sad, and we're going to think about that, because she was like part of it, but it also isn't shocking, right? It's like, oh, that's like, you know, Chewie, as since this example, Chewie eventually getting mooned off. And then
mooned off? Mooned off, dude.
Like, it's mooned sad, to death? And you're
like,
that's heartbreaking, but there isn't a lot of shock to it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what the? But it isn't just like you're going to sit there and be like, I can't believe that happened.
It's more like, wow, that's how Chewie dies.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the same thing here. It's like, oh, man, I am so disappointed that this celebrity died. I followed their career their entire life versus I'm in utter shock that this person died and I just saw it on Twitter and they were alive yesterday and everything seemed – it's like that kind of vibe. Yeah. And that's – it's two different experiences. It's like – and that's what I think is rough about the new trilogy is that a lot of the stuff that happens, it's because we didn't have time with any of these people. And in these old books, we have so much time with them that by the time we're done, we're going to be like, that was satisfying as shit. I can convinced of this.
We can also talk.
We're going to literally hit every story. Yeah. We're going to know every.
We're going to see the whole thing.
Every step.
Admiral Dala and the Sun Crusher. I am ready for it.
The thing is, we are changing too, though. Like, it's not just different stories in Star Wars that like are the big thing that you're going to notice. Like, the idea of people getting mad about Han Solo dying in The Force Awakens, right? Like, part of the anger there is, like, from a business standpoint, you're like, oh, we killed him off now. We can't get any more Han Solo movies. Like, in the sense of, like, we're thinking about it from this outside perspective of, like, Harrison Ford, the actor, and, like, whether or not they would recast Han Solo or, like,
this. I mean, I was thinking about it from the, what is, this is not, who is this guy you're saying is Han Solo? Why is he like back to before when he was young dumb, and then you killed him?
It's just
so
weird.
It's a little more than that.
It's
but
that's what I'm saying. It's just this weird thing of like, people in the audience are like the producer now a lot. Like we talk about movies the same way we talk about like the people going free agent, you know, like on like a sports team or something. Like there's a lot more like industry talk.
Actually, I think what MCU started to like. Did you hear who signed a 9-picture deal?
Yeah, exactly right. And like a 9-picture deal is insane, by the way. Like the fact that that's like something we don't.
That was like Samuel Jackson. Yeah. They were like, oh shit. And then he bowed out after like 3 and then came back at 7 later.
Yeah, but like that's what I'm saying. Like we're thinking about it in that way now too. It's not, we're not thinking purely about the character wrapping up as a character. Like Han Solo dying, like if in a different world where we thought about things differently, like even if we hadn't seen all that stuff and he comes and he dies and whatever, we lose him and he regresses to how he was before or whatever, like doesn't matter because you think to yourself, oh, this is just how he dies. But you know, we have this infinite story. It doesn't matter. Like if you think about Han Solo as a tool for stories, like there isn't even really a overarching plot to his life. It's just a series of events that happened that,
That is life, technically.
Welcome to life.
But I just mean, okay.
So there's plot points and then it ends.
Yeah. Well, it's for some characters, but like for a character like
a human
Michael Corleone, though, for example, right? Every time you see him, it's like you're tracking an arc for the character that's happening, and that's the whole story of Michael Corleone.
But that's because with that, there's an intention.
That's
like,
exactly what I mean.
They fought
yeah.
for every like Michael Corleone scene because they were like, this is his arc, and if we cut any bit of it, you will miss out on what makes him who he is.
But that's what I'm saying. There is no Han Solo arc. You know what I mean? So like the fact
there is a Han
Solo. No, there's not though. Like there's not like here's the phase of his life where he did this and then he like learned and then his whole life is like one big lesson and it's like one literary storyline. It's like not.
Well, I mean, he has an arc as a character. I think arc is the wrong word then. If you,
I'm saying not, like, I'm talking about I'm talking about the life of Han
Solo.
It's not like a written plot where everything that's ever happened to Han Solo stories is a narrative that all matches up. That's
but
what
that's I'm
saying.
But that's because his character is a rogue with a heart of gold with a backstory that really truly should always be a mystery because that's what makes him a compelling character is not knowing what he's saying if it's true or not and what his real intentions are and why and that's why everyone loves him.
If he died in this movie, I wouldn't even be sad.
Yeah, if he like gave his life to save Luke, then it would be like, yeah, all right, he got his money and turned around and saved Luke, and that's fine. What a great ending for that character at the end. It checks out, yeah.
I like it better when the stakes are lower for death in an adventure story. Like, they're not real. There's no reason that they need to be alive. That's what I'm saying. Like, Han Solo in the sequel trilogy, there's no reason that he needs to be alive. It's just that it's done in a way that was unsatisfying to people. And so there's like anger there instead of like totally what should be there, which is just like, oh, so that's the end of Han Solo. You know what I mean? Like it's in.
Well, no, you tell stories because they are emotionally resonant. So, like, pretending like it's weird that people got attached to a person that...
It is
that
weird.
Hundreds of people over half a century really wanted you to like. It's yeah, completely but, natural that you
okay,
would
Okay, so Davis
care.
Is still really mad about the sequels, but here's the thing.
No, but you're trying
no, he
to
is.
I actually,
like,
I actually kind of agree with Davis on this, though.
No, but I'm just saying, the difference is...
We like movies you're because getting, they make things that aren't real, real for us.
We get, I know, but we're getting very far away from my point, which is that the difference is between Han Solo in Force Awakens, which is a movie that's not very good in is it a classic sense, right? It's like probably not going to be as important to movies as even Episode One is,
sure.
Right? Like,
I mean, you're yeah, right. You're
Star
right.
Wars, Star Wars, you know, it's the return of Star Wars again, but like, it was a big high profile thing. He died. Everybody was mad. And it's because of what I'm, well, the point that I'm making is that the reason that there's this feeling about that is because there is this 50 years, this community of people that are all waiting to see what happens, and then he dies. But if Han Solo, if you don't know that Han Solo is going to be Han Solo, the character who has all these adventures, you know, he could be the guy who dies. It's like in
he's Poe.
Yeah, like yeah. If Poe died, I wouldn't have cared. Like, I wouldn't have been like they wasted Poe, like that. Yeah. You know that sort of thing. And so, I think the fun of this movie is that we're in that zone.
And this whole podcast is the like.
I mean, we're gonna find that that's not the case. Like, you know, like as we go on, right?
No, it's gonna build on it, but like yeah. That's the cool. The cool is like revisiting those.
Yeah,
there will be some truly awful books and or comics that we have to get through, and that's fine.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that's part of it. That's
sure,
the experience.
But right now, what I mean is, right now, everyone's pure creation.
Yeah.
Right now, where we're at,
we're Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Yeah.
Right now,
yeah, like right Holy now, shit. Right now, everyone's pure. There's no like should be ought
no
to be.
No one fell in the chocolate river.
Yeah, there's no character had a way they should have turned out that they didn't turn out.
Right,
like nothing has. There's no speculation. There's no like. There's nothing to base anything off of. This is the only time in this entire like evolution of us reading through Star Wars that this is. Even by the time we read the next thing. And actually, Splinter of the Mind's Eye is especially interesting because it itself got erased. And then the next thing was the holiday special, which also got erased, but also brought Boba Fett. Like, we're going to get this like huge, weird mess, and we're going to kind of track and see all the different fandom. Because I think
Before
Star Wars...
Before they codified what Star Wars was,
yeah,
there's this...
fandom rage even what that was, right?
I would love if anyone out there listening right now either has access to or knows someone... I would love to know what people in 1979, 1980 thought Star Wars was going to be.
Yeah.
There's like someone wrote an article or like some kid just wrote like fan fiction, whatever
we're
you
literally,
have.
Literally Alan Dean Foster is that kid and we're going to read like, it right after this.
But I'm like there's clearly a time period where there were two movies. Like even after the end of Empire.
Yeah.
I can't imagine because I remember being young and seeing the second Matrix movie. And what the third Matrix movie was compared to what the second Matrix movie was giving us.
Yeah.
I was so let down by that third movie because in my mind I was like, it's a Matrix, then a Matrix, and all of it's fake and like Neo. Like I had so many envisions.
Low key, like that's kind of what it ended up being.
It was a Jesus allegory. But anyway, like the thing that I think is interesting is that there's going to be a point.
Started as a self-actualization allegory too.
Yeah.
God, that first movie is perfect.
It's so good. Exactly the same thing.
And you never. It is the thing where like and watching, like, going and seeing like indie movies again, being like, oh, Fables.
Yeah.
Movies that aren't like this is what happened.
Yeah.
And this is and instead of being metaphorical,
Morpheus doesn't matter. Neo doesn't matter.
They're not real people.
Yeah.
Well, once you make two and three, suddenly no, he actually is. He was a stand-in for anybody. Anybody could be. It literally ends with him talking to like you,
right?
Being like you could be the one, but no. Now he is the only one, and Morpheus is Morpheus.
Now we got to figure that out. Yeah.
But then
yeah,
once you do that,
and that's you're saying this like, it is a fable.
We are
they even
free.
Start with the like there was a republic.
Don't worry
it
about
it. Doesn't
that. Yeah.
Matter about don't.
Yeah.
All you have to know is this: like there is
this
the purity
is the
because then it like you know that it's a story, not. An event. Like,
yeah. The only thing people can be mad about right now, if they read the book and they watch the movie, is the color of the X-Wings A couple missing scenes.
Well, let's talk about specifics of the movie then, because I'm just the image of the book that, like, I probably talked about on this podcast. Jesse, we used to watch Game of Thrones together.
We did.
Of the group, you were the only one that read the book. Everybody else hadn't. And you had that air about you. Like, and it's totally like, because
you were
it.
Blind every week on the what was going to happen in the episode, just like everybody else, too, right? You just were finding out how different it was.
I sat there like a smug asshole.
Famously, motherfucker brought to the Red Wedding. None of us knew what the fuck was happening. Jesse shows up with a fucking, like, red velvet wedding cake. Literally, that says happy wedding day. And I think we're all like,
oh, that's cute.
What does this? No, we were like, this is by season 3?
Yeah, everyone knew bad shit was going to happen.
We were like, what does this mean? And you're like,
I was like, enjoy your cake, guys.
That was the most, that ending of the episode where everybody was dead quiet and Ryan Tellez just screamed, no! Like, do you remember? He was like,
yes.
We also were probably drinking during it.
Yes.
Too. But it was like, and Jesse, it's just like, it was, I'm just wondering, there had to have been at least literally one person who was like, I read the book, and like showed up and was like, they're supposed to drop through the ceiling. Like, I just,
yeah.
I'm trying to do like Crendor's voice. Yeah. I don't know why, but even though those people can be obnoxious sometimes or not, the idea that there might have been somebody is so juicy, so beautiful to me that they're like, this, but.
That's what's interesting, right? Like, that's the special thing that we're in, is like total purity right now. Like, there's only been one story told. It's been told twice. It was based, one was directly based off the other. Yeah. There's really, like, if you like were smoking a joint or something in between, you probably don't even remember the differences between the movie and the book. But, oh man, I don't think that it's possible to talk about Star Wars. And I mean, I know we just talked about like the plot last episode of Star Wars 1 and kind of like how it all works together. But like, I wanted to take this time to also just kind of focus on the other half of Star Wars outside of the stories, which is us kind of like the Star Wars fans sort of like being born into like the culture that we are today, right? Like the just like where that all came from. And I'm interested because, you know, as we track this, we're going to be able to also track like fan mail, and we're also going to be able to track like, you know, articles that were written by press before movies would have already been released. And you know, as we get into that type of stuff, like, to me, that conversation and what's going on behind the scenes with like creative, like, you know, there's like a huge drought for like 7 and 8 years where there was no Star Wars media, you know, like stuff like that. Like, I'm just so interested in how that created Star Wars fans as much as I'm interested in how it created Star Wars the world.
Well, you have to think about the fact that all of us talking right now.
Yeah.
None of us were
alive.
We weren't around for the original trilogy. I think I was maybe a baby during Return of the Jedi. Maybe.
83?
Yeah. 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 Yes. I would have been but you guys weren't around.
I was not alive.
And
I was dead for that.
And I think it's certainly interesting that I know that I was a huge Star Wars fan as a kid, but I don't think I can pinpoint when that switch flipped. I don't know if it was like I was over at a friend's house. I remember being at a friend's house watching Spaceballs for the first time as a kid.
Yeah.
And being like, that was hilarious, but it's already because I love Star Wars. I don't know when I like grew into it as a child. And I don't know when I saw a movie, when I was always baffled me. It just was always there.
My friend's dad had a VHS tape of it that had the like romantic cover where he's holding the lightsaber up.
Yeah, yeah.
With like Babe Leia on the side. You know that one?
Yes.
He had that and it was like dilapidated. And I can't imagine that it was that old because it was a VHS tape and it was like the early 90s, because I know for sure that it was before the special edition, because I had the version. When I saw that, I saw Star Wars 1, and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen, when I was like, you know, 7 or 8 years old.
I'm so surprised you can remember that. I can't remember when I first watched
it. Ray Bradbury can remember being
there. I mean, I've talked about it on this podcast before. I grew up watching them because our neighbor Barbara would babysit us during my parents' date night. She had all of the like original Kenner toys from when her son was a kid. And so I would just watch one of the movies each week, every Wednesday night, play with all of the toys, and then I would eat a fucking Tyson's amazing patty,
yes,
with mayonnaise and ketchup and a big tall of 2% milk.
Good lord.
Glass. Like, I like, that's exactly how I like, I like
that is like a 90s kid's
so like, that's
forbidden.
What, every week that was my life for, you know,
what
years.
Was the name of the one with the penguin?
Oh my god, the
manly meals or whatever they're
called. No, the
Hungry Man, no.
No, Hungry Man was different.
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
There's the kids something.
With the one with the brownie, right?
Yes, yes. That's, you would microwave it. The brownie would like rise in the microwave.
That's
yes.
That's the one. That's the Star Wars meal for me. But I got the cassette. I saw the first one and I was like, that's it. And then for like my birthday or Christmas, I got the Leonard Maltin trilogy. The one that has the half faces,
but it's
the original cuts, and it's Leonard Maltin interviewing George Lucas at the top of each tape. And George Lucas has like the biggest goiter on earth or something. I don't know. He's not looking too great. But I remember watching that. And it's interesting to think that I was a Star Wars fan as a kid before the special edition came out. And that at age 9 or 10, when I saw that movie, I had a like fan rage moment about how weird it was that there were all these extra scenes in my movie.
Interesting.
You know?
Dude, that it makes total sense because, I don't know, whenever something is like different for kids, I mean, and for adults too, because adults are just older
big kids. Yeah.
Like, you're like, no, this is wrong. That's not how it's supposed to be. So it like makes perfect sense because all your brain had probably for knowledge was like just Star Wars. So anything is like your whole world is changed.
It's like, hello, a political liberal, a pop culture conservative?
What was great about the re-releases was taking people who had never seen Star Wars to a movie theater to see it.
Mostly,
I mean, like, I remember taking my friend Brian's little brother, and we just, like, watched him lose his mind. And it was the most pure thing I've ever seen. He'd never seen any of them before.
Yeah.
And they released, I think it was, like, 1 month after another.
It was, like, like, not too soon. It wasn't too long between them. Yeah.
And so I got to watch him see the original trilogy back to back. And it was beautiful. It was like watching this kid experience religion or some shit. He like was in it, and he became such a big little nerd about it. And we were just like, I'm so proud of you, buddy. It's so cute. And that, it was fun because I know that that's exactly what I was like.
The real question is, are we going to watch the special editions?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I'm excited for those episodes
to like compare and contrast and see where we're at as Star Wars fans at that point. Like, that's the thing that I'm really interested in, is just seeing like what stuff I'm holding on to, what stuff I like, what stuff I want to be the same way, see what they tried, see what they kept. Like, dude, these Lando and Han Solo books that are about to come down the pipes, so the fucking TV show, the cartoons, the Sindel Tawani Ewok
movies.
Watch
that wild-ass Ewok movie? Whoa, all right, never mind.
There's two of them. There's two of them. Yeah, we're going to watch
those
both of them.
Those are wild as shit, dude.
You know what's crazy is the little fast dude from one of those movies, he's in Star Tours. And I think I might be wrong, but I haven't seen it since I was a baby, like not a baby, but like a young boy. I'm pretty sure that maybe she crashed in a Star Tours ship. I can't remember.
I know this has nothing to do with Star Wars, but when we get to the Ewok movies, can we just take some time out and go watch Willow?
Yeah. Just like, for fun. Dude, they're
just
making
like for fun. Go
dude,
watch
they're bringing
Willow.
It back. And
yeah,
he's in
dude.
It.
I haven't seen Willow in maybe 20 years, and I love that movie.
It scares the shit out of me. It's like fucked up special effects,
it's
but
crazy.
I'm ready to go.
Dude, Labyrinth when I was a kid.
Oh, my God.
Very scary. And the Dark Crystal? Yeah. Oh. That shit was fucked up. And actually Star Wars, too. I remember when I was afraid of the Yoda cave.
Yoda scared you?
No. When he cuts off the head and it's him.
Yeah,
and it was
a
little, and it's like, it's definitely not a real head. You know, it's like a like mannequin head of him for a second. That's when it like fucking freaked me out. And then you see his like real face in there.
You mean like when they blow it off and then they like
it's like
him
it's like
there?
A special effect for a second and it looks like janky. I don't even know if they kept that in the special edition.
I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
There's that weird moment where it's like a little too like,
it's like one insert shot, it's like smoky and it looks like shit.
It doesn't look right. Yeah.
That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. But anyway, Star Wars, right? That was good. Do we have anything else we want to go through? Like,
There's a couple little changes we can talk about that I like. And we kind of talked about it last episode about like re-looking at novelizations of movies as being not two of the same thing, but cool companion pieces, because like it was really cool. You know, you always know that there was more of Biggs, and being able to read the book, I feel like I got Biggs, and like
you got like an extra storyline,
like how you're talking about with like Han Solo. Maybe in a different universe, Biggs lived, and Biggs is the Han,
yeah,
but he wasn't, and he got to die, and you got to feel it, and then the book, you got to see who he was to Luke. They got an extended fight scene where they all got moments, and then he died, and that was really cool. So not needed in the movie, because he already's got like three mentors.
It's just about pacing, yeah.
Well, it's like, you got like him, Han, and Obi-Wan, it's clear, who are kind of like clear, all...
Yeah,
yeah, it was probably a real simple decision when like you had all of his friends watch the movie who like...
They probably weren't feeling great about the Wormy nickname anyway.
Probably wanted, yeah.
They're like, we can
and
lose
the,
that.
And the final battle, you know, is a lot more truncated, but you don't... It's really cool that they had more there, but you don't actually need it.
The impression is the same, yeah.
And you can't, in a book format where you can explain, like how you were talking about, like, he was like, why didn't you say, have somebody say, it's the Dark Lord of the Sith, and you're like,
right.
He's in a fucking, like, a picture is worth 1,000 words, so you have to type those out in a book, or write them out in a book, but you can just see them, so you didn't need it. What are the big changes?
There's really not that many. Like, it's gory. Things that were interesting that you could notice were I was surprised to find that the like imagery shots of Obi-Wan like slinking around the Death Star are there. They're just like a shot of Al Guinness walking. So
yeah, he's walking like a human would walk. He's just instead of shadow.
He's just
jumping.
Like, he's like creeped over, but they didn't like.
You can see. You could just see how effects. It's paced. You can just see how it's paced similarly much more than you. Than you might think, and I never would have thought about, like, it colored my watching of the movie to think about him, like, maybe he's using the Force during this scene, like, maybe he's slinking around. It's exciting to, like, see that built out. And like I say, a book is just a different medium than a film. Like, what works in one doesn't necessarily work in the other. And I think I touched on this, actually, even last time, but talking about underlining and pointing out pop culture genres and like postmodern genres, especially the supermarket mass paperback adaptation is a fine art of its own now.
Yeah.
You know, and that Star Wars one is one of the classics of this. Like, I didn't realize how many millions and millions of copies it sold, right? It was like a huge deal. But Quentin Tarantino recently wrote the mass market supermarket version of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it doesn't have the scene where he kills the people at the end at all. It's just not in the story. And it like is the framing device for the whole story is what's his name? Oh, fuck. I can't remember Leonardo DiCaprio's name. You're whatever his name
is.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, but he's old. And the framing device of the story is him watching the little girl get an Oscar as an adult woman. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And it works because it's still the same Rick Dalton. It's the same thank you myself. Yeah. And
that was a novelization version of you that
yeah.
I'm just saying like the impression that you get from the movie version of Star Wars and the impression that you get from the book version of Star Wars, I would say are like fucking the same. Like, I feel like the book is like the book version of this movie. But
yeah, it's the same story, but it's like a guy, like your grandfather, your uncle telling you the story.
But I got the impression, like I got the same impression of Obi-Wan from the film that I got from the book.
But the difference
it's just told, it's like the way that you get that from my imagination is different in film versus book form.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was interesting coming out of watching the movie is the fact that one of the complaints I had about the book was that they never describe anything in great detail. It's always like, this is a thing, and this is how it works, and he kind of is wearing a dark outfit. Let's move on. And when you see it in the movie, obviously you're getting the visualization of what it is. But at the same time, the things that the book does do well are just, you're unable to put that in a movie. And so having the two together is like a really solid, compelling.
It's like HD Star Wars.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I feel even better about this movie now that I've read the book. I am super into what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it like just perfectly complements it.
Absolutely.
In a way that I'm like very excited, and now I'm like, fuck, I what other, is there a great list of like surprising movie tie-in books that aren't just cash-ins that are,
well,
like
get ready for like the next three movies that we watch, because every, I believe that each one of the books for each one of the movies is by a different author, so I'm kind of excited about that.
Oh, to get the different styles.
But I mean, I don't know why, but it's true. Like, they are all different guys.
I know that we've all said this a million times, but the idea of it being, and Davis, you were just saying this, like a story someone is telling. When you think about the book, it does a great job where, unlike other, like you were saying, the supermarket kind of like books, where they try to do this whole different thing.
The recycled paper smell books.
Yeah, this one just straight up feels like a dude telling you a story, and just how if I was telling you a story about something, I wouldn't spend 20 minutes describing a character. I'm telling the story. I'd be like, yeah, so this is like kind of how the Force works.
Yeah, it's, and not this one fucking dude Hemingway, to right? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, again, I think it extremely compliments, because now you've basically had two people tell you a story, and even though they're slightly different, knowing both stories makes you a better person. And I love that. I think that's super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. I really liked it. I liked the book. I liked the movie. I was surprised how, like, much they... I was surprised how much I didn't mind reading the exact same story and then, watching it again. It actually, like, enhanced my experience rather than made me bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
The, I don't know. It was well cast. It's just a great... I fucking love that movie.
Mark Hamill's great. He really is annoying. Anthony Daniels.
He is a teenager who doesn't want to be there. Like, it's, yeah. He's not supposed to be the cool guy.
What's that flashing?
The
Anthony Daniels doesn't know what he is yet.
He's so handsome. Like,
yeah.
Before he gets in the motorcycle accident, Mark Hamill is a very sexy. He's not an ugly guy, but we'll see in the next movie. Look at his face.
He looks very fucked up in the next movie, but in Return of the Jedi, he doesn't look that fucked up. He looks like Mark Hamill.
I mean, a lot of plastic surgery has happened between.
Yeah, now yes, and then. Yes.
But Empire is like he looks close to when it happened.
He looks rough in Empire, yeah.
And it's hard because there's so many like urban legends around these movies, and depending on when you talk to George Lucas himself, he has a different answer on when stuff is
sure
on what it was created right. Or why. But they were like, you know, I felt like for years they were like, oh, he gets attacked by the Wampa as like a way to cover it, and then he or somebody was like, no, that's not what happened. But it's like, it's just a pure coincidence that you had a scene already written where his face gets disfigured exactly in the same way that it happened in a motorcycle accident.
I'm sure they...
You want me to believe that story?
I'm sure maybe they leaned into it. I don't know. You know, I have no idea. But first hot take of the podcast. Here we go. Too many wampas in the old canon.
Yeah.
I'll throw that out there. It's the rancor of the old canon is wampas. There's too many. There's brown wampas. There's white wampas. There's just too many. There's too many wampas in the old canon. How about that? That's a hot take for me.
In video games, especially.
Yeah, especially in video.
So many video games.
Especially
wampas.
In video games.
They threw those guys in there all the time.
That should
kill.
Be like fucking Bigfoot. Like, it's so fucking weird that there's like a million wampas in Star Wars
but
games.
Yet they, at least in like the New Hope games, don't they just make up a bunch of monsters that you never see in the movies?
I'd rather they did that. Like,
no, I know. I'm saying like there's a precedent for creating their own, and then they're like, you fight him 7 times.
When the one like walks out of the desert and shadows the Empire, I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
It's also like when rancors are on every planet.
Yeah.
Like everyone has a rancor. It's like that true? Is that?
They're like the dogs of Star Wars? Seriously? Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. That's all fun stuff. And I'm going to explore the flavor of inconsistencies in Star Wars over the years. I'm interested to see how we react now, because I didn't care about inconsistencies. I famously don't care about inconsistencies, I think, on this podcast, but like, I'm interested to see how our current Star Wars and media consuming minds make sense of the original canon of Star Wars and the storytelling decisions that they make.
That as a kid, most of it didn't bother me because I wasn't like, this doesn't make sense. Kyle Katarn, if he could do this, where was he during the event? Like,
yeah,
it wasn't that. But I also was like, I don't like the special editions. I did not love. By the time Attack of the Clones came out, I was like, a high schooler who had hot takes on everything. So I like already was like, fuck this. But
that's how I feel about wampas in the old
like, yeah,
I'm just joking.
Early on, what was it? Grant Morrison in the, what was the book that you had?
Super Gods?
It just talks about like the problem with like the comics authority and the way people would look at like when people get weird about like Batman and Robin's relationship. You're like, kids don't care. That's how like don't worry about it.
Kids aren't old enough to have learned to be afraid of gay people yet, like you adults.
Right, but like, and that's I think how I approached it too. I'm just like, here's a new piece of Star Wars. I don't think my mind needed to have it slot into this like ongoing narrative the way that.
But it kind of does. But it kind of does now, right?
It does now, and I'm trying to deprogram that for my own enjoyment and just for the understanding of like, you know what? It would matter more if it was like they set out with the intention of doing all this, but now it's 60 years or however many years later, and now they're like, you're just trying to
I'm interested genuinely to see how much of it's baked into the text itself and how much of it's baked into the context. How much the rage comes from how much the rage comes from the actual script that we're reading, you know, of like The Bad Batch or whatever the fuck, or Boba Fett the show. I wonder if it's just the show itself being bad or something that's making me not like it in that way, or if it's my mentality now. I'm interested to see because I haven't read any of this shit. Like I haven't read any like Truce at Baccarat. Like,
oh yeah.
There's just so many like the Han Solo trilogy, Bollocks and Blue Max.
I can't wait to get the Lando trilogy where he's stealing fleets and shit.
Yeah, there's just
excited.
I haven't read any of it, and I just can't wait to see how much benefit of a doubt I'm willing to give, and if that's something that has changed in me over the years, or if the writing is just amazing.
Honestly, I feel like what we'll discover is that every time something new in the Star Wars world came out before Episode One and they started down this new path,
yeah,
during that, I don't know, 15 year period, even if it was bad Star Wars, it was new Star Wars and we were just thrilled to have it exist.
Yeah.
And so even if you go look at the video games or the comics, some of them are just Jedi Knight.
The cutscenes are whack, dude.
Like, they're fun, but if you're there for story or, like, any of it making sense, it's not gonna. And so I think our standards were just different. And then once George Lucas said, everything is gonna be this way, and I'm gonna set some lore to it, and we're gonna create this thing, then I think expectations changed because it was like, oh, this show is about this thing,
right?
And this movie connects to this thing, and now we have these cartoons, and suddenly it's a bigger thing than it was, because for a while it was just a bunch of, you know,
nerds
hoping they get something new.
It had like the energy of like YouTube collabs in 2012 versus like YouTube collabs in 2022.
Well, and something that is way different now is like we now have no content drought like, as a kid, that, like, cartridge of Star Wars for the Game Boy got every inch of it used up. There was nothing but bone and even very little of that left. Now it's too, like, it's whatever. So not only were we excited to get more, we did that shit dirty. Like, no stone was unturned with that stuff.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy.
Star Wars Rebellion played that game so much. Broke my PC.
Is that one of the strategy ones?
Yeah. That one was great.
Dude, I can't wait to get to all this shit. I can't wait to get to all this shit. It's all on the horizon, and it's like, I'm just very happy that it's all coming down the pipes. And there's all kinds of surprises that we have in store for the listener as well to roll out over the next couple months, which is also exciting to me. I don't know. That's exciting. I like it. I'm excited that we are this far. And I don't know if I'm more excited to read Splinter of Mind's Eye or watch the holiday special. I literally don't know which one is more exciting to me right now in this context. I have no idea. It's so exciting.
Thing is we don't have to pick. We're just gonna go through it.
Yeah, I know. I just like they're so interesting to me in this context. Like I never really was like that guy who was like, it's Christmas, let's watch the holiday special. But watching it and being
Alex hates Christmas.
You just being like,
I heard that.
That's fine.
I heard that.
I'm fine with that. I do. I do hate Christmas. You know, it's just interesting to me to be like, all right, the Star Wars Holiday Special is them trying to decide what to do next with Star Wars before they decided to make a movie, and it's in the context of like a fucking, you know, TV special with like
random celebrities,
you know, Frank Sinatra or something like that, or Dean Martin type thing, but it's with like the Star Wars cast. That's like one thing. Splinter of the Mind's Eye is like them stumbling towards trying to figure out what to follow up the story with,
right,
without the context of it being like the biggest thing in the world. I don't know. It's just exciting. The premise of reading something in that context is very exciting to me. So hopefully when we get there, it's not just a big pile of shit. Yeah.
But if it is, it'll be a pile of shit that
an interesting pile of shit
experience together.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the fun is when you go digging for treasure, you sometimes find old fossilized pieces of shit.
Oh yeah. So get ready for that. I already read 40 pages of Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Interesting book so far. Well,
and for the holiday special, you can listen along as we just experience it.
Just have a good time while we you know, it's going to be live.
I think there's a 4K
77th
edition of
I know it's on YouTube. That's the best I think we're going to get.
The highest quality version of it imaginable.
I remember they used to sell it on the rack at my comic shop as a bootleg. I remember there was like a little spinning bootleg rack on the counter, and it had like the Fantastic Four movie.
The old shitty one?
Yeah,
yes.
And that, and the Flash old TV Spider-Man. Show. Yeah,
all that stuff. I got an interesting connection to the holiday special that I'm excited to talk about on that episode.
That's exciting.
Can't wait. All right. I'm outie.
Okay. Alex just left. I guess that's it. All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Alex is walking away.
Peace out, guys. See you later. I'm far.
Alex is pretty far. We'll special effect that. We'll make that sound better. Oh, no. Is that an X-Wing? Alex, are you taking off and flying away?
What we'll do is we'll get somebody to like, do his voiceover.
Oh, no. Starfighters are... TIE Fighters are coming to get you, Alex. Get out of the way.
I'll take care of it. Don't worry. I'll get off. Not Porkins.
Oh, I got Porkins. Oh. He crashed immediately. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
No. I'm all right.
Well, that's it for us. We'll be back soon with some more Star Wars. Thank you so much for being a part of this, and we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions from our listeners at patreon.com/SWOCBC, where again, this week, we've just released the accompanying audio watch-along for Star Wars 1977, featuring Alex, Jesse, and Davis. And thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a discussion about our next selection, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, a novel by Alan Dean Foster, first released on March 1st, 1978. This episode was edited by Alex Del Campo and Alex Fasciani. The theme song is Venus, the Bringer of Peace by Gustav Holst, performed by the U.S. Air Force Heritage of America Band. Original show art by Jackie Whistler. See you next time.